So today is the 5th of December, 2019. It is the 7th of Kislev Tavshin Pei. We are finishing up the 5th parak of the Varim, parak Hei, Parshas Va'aschana, which contains within it the Aseres HaDibros, at least the second go-around of the Aseres HaDibros. And it's a little unclear, not just a little, very unclear, how to negotiate the changes in text between the two. The Rish, everybody obviously notices it. The Ramban had had his take. First couple of Dibros were exactly what was said by Hashem. The other ones were Moshe said, so therefore maybe it needs a little bit more explanation now. And then there is, actually this is where I found it originally, the but everybody wants to focus. You know, let's take a step back. Let's do this first. The issue of in Kaveis Avicha V'Yasimecha L'man Yarichun Yamecha. That is the description here. In order so that you will have the lengthening of days. Where is it? Kaveis Avicha V'Yasimecha Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha L'man Yarichun Yamecha V'Yasimecha Kasher L'man Yitavlach. Sorry. That you'll have long days. That it'll be good to you. Al Daman This Land Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosin Lach. Which Hashem has given you. So why is that? What is the idea of the long life connected to Kaveidus Avicha V'Yasimecha? Why is that specifically talked about in this context? So the Gemara itself raises the issue of where people have done Kivud Av'Eim and they've died, right? Well, it's Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Okay, well, if it's Olam Haba, so how is this different than any other mitzvah? I mean, if you say they had long life, so that particularly has to do with Kaveidus Avicha V'Yasimecha, So then you have a question of how do I understand that connection? But if you say, oh no, that just means that's referring to an idea of an Olam Haba, so then why is this different than any other mitzvah? Any mitzvah, we assume that there's going to be a war that's going to be coming in the world to come. So there is a book here, Family Redeemed, Essays on Family Relationships from Rav Soloveitchik. There is 6 essays in here. It is collected. I mean, there's Rabbi Rakef in one of his talks about Rav Soloveitchik says, multiple talks. He says that after the Rav passed away, so they were lamenting a little bit that very little. He didn't write very much. He didn't write very much. That was published during his lifetime. I probably think of like 4 or 5 books that were published during his lifetime. Maybe a couple more than that. And that was it. So Rav Soloveitchik said that he consoled the daughter, Avraham Lichtenstein's wife, by saying that, like, just the Vilna Gaon, when the Vilna Gaon passed away, there was very little written also. There were comments on the Shulchan Aruch. He wrote Evan Shlema. There were other things, but everything else got written later. And now if you try to figure out Svarim by the Vilna Gaon, so there's bookshelves of Svarim that are attributed to the Vilna Gaon that are collected from various things that he said. He says the same thing is going to be with Rav Soloveitchik. So that's the truth. If you try to collect all the books that are written, just his Torah, not even biographies, just him, the things that he said or the collections of his shiurim, so it's bookshelves of things that have been written by him. So one of the organizations putting that together is the organization Meotzer Harav, and this was the first thing that they put out. Now, where do you do that? How do you do that? How does that work? So the truth is, for this and for other of the Meotzer Harav Sfarim, there were manuscripts that were found. He did write out, in fact, when he gave shiurim, his shiurim were mostly, you can see, from the pictures of him giving shiurim, he had like these memo pads. He actually wrote out his shiurim before. So they did collect these manuscripts. Made them ready to print. In fact, this particular essay, it tells you in the beginning of this where they came from. I mean, this was presented at this time, and we found the manuscript, and we added this, and you put an extra chapter from here, and put it together. So he has an article, the 5th essay here is Kivud Umora, Honor and Fear of Parents. It was originally composed in 2 letters, so the summaries of the two, meaning at the end of the first year when he said, next time we're going to talk about blah, 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 or the beginning of the second year when he said, last time we talked about blah, blah, blah. So he took that out, put the two together, and it says that he and he added in from another piece as well. And then you have an essay of Kivud Umora. So that's how these things get put together. So he records here that there's 3 values that one gains from Kivud Av'Eim. Perhaps there's an order of 3 levels of honoring one's parents. And he says the starting point for honoring one's parents, he states as the utilitarian value of Kivud Av'Eim. So what is utilitarian? What does that mean?
I can get from them.
Right. What can I get from them? Or what is the purpose for me? that the starting point of honoring one's parents is, or and he puts this within the broader context of chesed in general, is, okay, how do I, what do I get out of it? And the Torah talks about that. The Torah talks about the idea that you give tzedakah people because there is a, you never know when the fortunes are going to turn and you'll be end up being the one that is collect, that is then collecting. And we...
Kahala says that too.
Yeah.
The waters will bring back something.
Yeah, I think it might be quoting that pasuk.
Out on the waters, comes back.
Right.
People
right.
Throw a bottle into the water, and 50 years later, somebody.
It shows up again someplace else. Okay, so then there's also a Gemara Maseches Moed Katan, also that one who gives proper hespedim. So he himself will be masped in an appropriate way. If he buries the dead, so he'll be buried appropriately. One who is carries the coffin, if he's one of the pale, one of the pallbearers, so he'll have other people that will carry for him. And he mourns others, so he'll have people that will mourn for him. So just even in the context of what we consider chesed shel emes, right, that the things that we do for the person who passed away, so we put that as chesed shel emes, still the Gemara is saying that there's a utilitarian value of it, that there will be things that one will get in return, that the hope is that in the future you'll be the one to benefit from those things that you gave to others. So he describes with regards to kivud ava'im, so kivud ava'im on one hand is perhaps not that way. I mean, we got all these things from our parents, but that's usually before the real mitzvahs of kivud ava'im set in. Sure, as when kids are kids, we train them, try to train them in how to honor parents and things like that. But the real mitzvah of kivud ava'im really comes up as the children get older and become adults, and their parents become older, and need to be cared for. Those are the real mitzvahs of kivud ava'im, and that's what the child. Now, what's the child going to get from that in exchange from the parent? So nothing. But the hope is that as the child gets older, they will be able to experience that. I mean, their kids will then take care of them. So leman yarichun yamecha perhaps is reflective of that idea that you'll honor your father and your mother, and you will have long days, and you will be treated accordingly. You will be helped out later by the next generation. That perhaps is one is the lowest of the approaches of kivud ava'im. Do this mitzvah so that you will get something in return. It's not a bad motive. I mean, he's pointing out that's not a bad motive. If you need that as the motivation, so that'd be the motivation. That's okay. But then there's, of course, higher levels as well. The idea of gratitude is where he talks about in the next section. And that's where he's quoting from this pasuk. That's where it drew my attention. But the levels above that is the mitzvah of Hakar Satov. That's what the Sefer Chinuch talks about as the source of or the motivating factor of kivud ava'im, honor one's parents because we recognize all the things that have been done for them, and therefore that's a need, meaning there is a need to show gratitude. There should be a need that people have in order to show gratitude. So that perhaps is the next level, and then the highest level he discusses as the what the Rav calls the antik awareness. So what does antik mean? I think it means, this one I didn't look up, the antik I think means that it's part of me. I mean, I recognize that I am connected to my parents in such a way that if they're, that honoring them is like honoring myself. And taking care of their needs is taking care of my needs. That we are so connected in that, and that's what I need to do. And perhaps that's greater than, like we put all chesed in that context. We honor haftal l'reicha kamocha. So we love others like we would love ourselves, whatever that means. So the parent, the caring for a parent is perhaps the greatest example of that. That we recognize that we are connected very much, and therefore their honor is connected to my honor, and that's where the mitzvah of kivud ava'im comes into play. Okay, so that's one issue I wanted to point out. Another issue. And this was brought to my attention. I just took in the art scroll. So he points out the Zachor and the Shamor, and the Ramban makes a comment that Zachor is said by Moshe and Shamor is said by the Jewish people. And what does that mean? The Ramban sort of made that comment with one of these Hamiv and Yavin lines. Sorry, those people understand can understand, and etc. But he quotes here from Rav Gedalia Shur that the positive remembrance of Shabbos contains within it the impossibility of violating it. I mean, for most of people, we sort of divide Hilchus Shabbos into two sections. There's the positive mitzvah, and there's the negative, right? There's the Kiddush, and the Challah, and the Seudos, and the Zmiros, and the, all the things that we're supposed to do on Shabbos. And then there is the Malachos on Shabbos, the things that we're not allowed to do on Shabbos. Now, are the two connected? So, maybe. I mean, we could totally bifurcated. We could totally separate the two and just say there's mitzvahs ha'aseis and the mitzvahs lo ta'aseis, and we don't have to combine them. And they don't necessarily have what to do with each other. So the point, the way it's quoted here, and then we'll, I actually went and tracked down this Or Gedaliahu, but the way it's quoted here is that for Moshe they were completely combined. That for Moshe there was Zachor, and the only way one could possibly observe the positive precepts of Shabbos is to have it contained within it the negative aspects. Meaning what flowed from the idea of recognizing Hashem as the creator of the world and who took us out of Mitzrayim is also, and therefore we're not going to plow the land either. Right? Obviously we're not going to plow the land. That it's like a contradiction to make Kiddush on one hand and then to turn on a light on the other hand. Right? It's just not going to, the two don't go together. So that's the way that Moshe understood it. So therefore when the Rabban says that Moshe spoke with regards to the with regards to Zachor and the people had with regards to the concept of Shamor, that's what it's that's what it means. I mean for Moshe Shabbos was defined by the do's and flew from them the don'ts. But for most of Klal Yisrael, Shabbos is defined by the don'ts, and perhaps we recognize that a little bit more by the do's, right? Understand that idea? So the do's, right, Zachor. Zachor is to remember Shabbos, which we interpret to be like make Kiddush. The making Kiddush is the fulfilling the mitzvah of Zachor es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Yeah? Okay, so I don't have a copy of Or Gedaliahu, so it could be that there's really someplace else, but it is on HebrewBooks.org. Hebrew Books, people don't realize this, but it's gotten so big, but Hebrew Books was originally put together to highlight American Gedolim. That's how it started, that there were the American Rabbanim who came to this country, European Gedolim came to this country in the early part of the previous century and ended up in these strange towns all over the place. They sort of hired a Rav who didn't have people to converse with, but they sat and like wrote Sfarim. And there's a lot of stuff out there. So that was collected and put together in HebrewBooks.org. And from there, it just expanded to all sorts of things that are available there. So the person who was credited, at least in the, we'd say, the Litvisha American world, as being the first American Gadol is Rav Gedaliah Shur. Gedaliah Shur was, I think was born in America. I had to check that out before. Did go to learn in Europe a little bit. Then came back to America. There's a story how he was, it was right before World War II, and he was trying to figure out whether to leave or not, and there was a letter that was written either to his parents or to him by one of the Gedolim saying, you shouldn't leave, everything's going to be fine here, and the letter didn't get to him until he had already left. What? He was born in Poland. Okay, but I think very early in his life came to America and then went back to Europe to learn. His father was in America and a letter went to him saying, don't leave, everything will be okay. But it didn't get to him at the time. He had already left yeshiva and survived. You know, and he became the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas and was sort of held up for many decades as being the example. Like, you see, you could be in America and still become a Gadol B'Torah. So there's a Sefer and Chumash Or Gedaliahu. So I looked in Parshas Vayeschanan, didn't have anything about this. So I said, oh, you know, let me take a look in Parshas Yisro. And I assume that this is the piece that the Art Scroll Chumash is quoting when it has it. It's really part of a greater answering more questions that we have on the Aseret HaDibros. Number one being this idea that Hashem said the entire thing at once. Ve'edber Elokim Eskol Adivrim Eileh. And Rashi makes the comment, Melamid She'amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Aseret HaDibros B'Dibur Echad. Hashem said the entire thing at one time, to the point that nobody could understand what he was saying. And then it had to be broadened out from there. So what was the point of that? What does that mean? What was the point of putting it, of Hashem, like we don't know what it means, but saying the entire Aseret HaDibros in one moment? What do we get from that? Especially if Bnei Yisrael, nobody's going to be able to understand it. So he explains, and then he expands this to the rest of the Aseret HaDibros, that all of all of Torah is connected. That everything, and there's positive and negative aspects, and the two of them are ultimately combined in order to define Bnei Israel's, in order to behind, to define what Jews' behavior should be. So, right. So the first time around, he explains, the first time when they collected when the Torah was given the first time, Bnei Israel kiblu hadibros nasu echad im hadibros. Bnei Israel was made one with the dibros. They were like completely tuned in. Ki hadibros lo yu rak bebchinas tzivui shelo tasu zeh velo tasu zeh. The dibros weren't just simply a list of things, don't do this and don't do this. Rather, it was made in a way, El Shanasu b'matzav kazeh shekol metziyah shalem haya sholo asiyah shel maisa keila, that their entire actions were merged with the Torah itself. Right? Ulamashal, even the lavim, even the prohibitions, balav shel lo tirtzach. For instance, in the prohibition of lo tirtzach, the idea that there is a negative commandment called lo tirtzach. So what is the positive precept of lo tirtzach? Now, what is the positive half of that? So he says, "Hareze be'inyan chiyuvi." That's not just a prohibition; that's actually a responsibility. Ki az nismalu b'nei Yisrael bi'ava ish l'reihu b'darga kuzu. That everybody, that all b'nei Yisrael should have a love for one another. Atshelo yashayech etzlam inyan shel ritzicha klal. Such that there is not even a possibility; there's not even a thought of doing any type of ritzicha. Or any type of killing, which could then be expanded to any type of damage. I mean, there should be the positive aspect of not to murder is the idea of togetherness, the idea to see everybody as described by the time of the Beis Hamikdash of Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. And he says so too with the other prohibitions, right? The idea of it, included within the prohibition of stealing is the idea that everybody has an action, and that's where the Ibn Ezra on the in Shmos asks about lo sachon, thou shalt not covet, thou shalt not have jealousy. And he asks the question, how could it be that you're going to remove from your heart, that there could be a prohibition in the idea of something that you're going to feel, and something that one's going to think. So he explains it with the mashal of, that a person, like a guy who's a farmer, and he sees the princess walk by, and he's not jealous of the prince, that the prince is married to the princess, because he realizes that it's not shaykh to him, it's not at all connected to him, it's completely belongs to somebody else. So that's the responsibility that we have. We're not going to be jealous of anything another person has because we recognize 100% that that's not supposed to be mine. That is supposed to be theirs. That, in fact, is part of their identity. If we have time, we don't have much time, but if we have time, maybe we'll get back to a little bit more about what that idea means. That everybody, that possessions define a person, and therefore it's not me, it's them. And that's the positive precept of lo signov or lo sachmod, or not to be jealous or not to steal. Right? And it has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with me, right? So how am I going to be jealous, or how am I going to try to plot in order to get that? So the positive aspect of that is to ensure that I get myself in the frame of mind that I recognize the idea of everybody having their own possessions. So then he continues on, and that's how we would understand the idea of zachor and shamor b'dibur echad, that the two of them are put together. That, and the first dibros it talks about, he adds in here someplace, therefore we find that in the first aseres dibros we pointed out this distinction. So how do we read the second half of the dibros? Lo sirtzach, lo sichmo, lo sinach, lo signov, lo san, right, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. In when you get to Parshas Vayeschanan, it's lo sirtzach, vilo sinach, vilo signov, vilo sanev erecha yitshaker. So why is that? Because the vav that connects it is only when you're talking about los ases, shelo lasose. It's only, and don't do this, and don't do that, and don't do the other things. That's already once there's a separation. If it's positive, the truth is you can make the same case the other way, but maybe just that there's a distinction between the way the prohibitions are recorded, because the first time through in Parshas Yisro, when Bnei Yisrael was all on a high level and was getting it directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they understood that there's no distinction between the positive and the negative. But here, when we're going through it the second time, so already there was that distinction that was made. That's what he explains. And then he explains also the idea of Zachor v'Shamor as well. V'dibros harishonos nemar Zachor, v'achronos it says Shamor, because in the first Dibros, Bnei Yisrael was in a matzav of Zachor. They were recognizing the positives. And the negatives of the prohibitions sort of flow flowed from the positives. So therefore, the number one aspect of Shabbos is Zachor. That's what they recognize. And what flows from Zachor is, we're not going to do any of the negatives of Shabbos either. We're not obviously, if it's a day of rest, we're not going to go out and collect mud, right? Which I guess would be the way it would be seen in the desert. But then the second time around, when it's when Bnei Israel sort of had gotten down in that level a little bit, so then the starting point of Shabbos is the Shamor, that we realize that there is negative things that one is not permitted to do. And what flows from the negative things is then that there are positive aspects to it as well. So that's that. With regards to the stealing and the jealousy, etc. So in the book Orchus Chaim, Ben Torah for Life, from Aaron Lupiansky, who is in Silver Spring now, so he published this recently. So the first section, it's really written for Bnei Torah who are going out to work. That now all of a sudden they're in the workplace, and you know, how is one trained and how is one prepared for that? So the first section is trying to figure out whether you should be, should you be going out to work or not? That's the first section. The second section is now all of a sudden you're earning a paycheck. If you're earning a paycheck, then now all of a sudden you're earning things. All of a sudden you have possessions. So what is your, discusses it as our new personal world, the world of possessions, that part of the Avodas Hashem is recognizing what it means to have kinyan, to have things. And if one has things, so that means that Hashem has trusted them with those things, that he is a ne'eman. He's considered trustworthy with regards to those things which that person has. So things that, he describes it as being, that's part of our, it becomes part of our identity. He has here someplace, yeah, that the idea of Bava Machteres, the idea that a person will, there's a halacha in Masechta Sanhedrin, right, that somebody is tunneling into your property, so you can kill them. Why can you kill them? Because they're assuming that you're going to defend yourself to the death, or defend your property, even if they're not coming to kill you, they're just coming to take your stuff. They're going to defend your property to the death, so therefore they're going to prepare to kill you. And if they're prepared to kill you, so then you're allowed to kill them. That's the way that Gemara works. So what does that mean? That I'm going to defend my property, to risk my life in order to save my property? He says, we are much more hesitant to risk our lives to earn things than we are to protect things. Right? Why is that? And we could sense this attitude a little bit with things that we've already purchased. Like, oy vey, I lost this thing. It takes you $5 to very easily find another one. No, that's mine. That's one I have already. Why? Because things that I have already, that's considered part of our identity. That's something that God, Hashem, has entrusted with us to make use of. And that, maybe even subconsciously, is why I want to hold on to those things that were, given to us. So if we, right, so we recognize that with regards to our own things, the things that we have is part of our identity, right? The house that we live in is part of our identity. The car we drive is part of our identity. All the things are part of our identity. So if that's the case, so things that other people have are part of their identity. So why would I think that I should go ahead and take it, right? So that perhaps is the positive aspect to the negative prohibitions of Lo Sachmon and Lo Signov that are found in the Aseret HaDibros. Okay, maybe we'll stop here and pick up Nes Hashem tomorrow.